Office, a podcast which hosts my unfiltered, unscripted, and genuine thoughts about things going on in the entertainment world today. This week, I brought on a guest. His name is TJ. You've heard him before in a previous episode, and it was great to talk to him. I was excited to bring him on because you'll hear in the episode, and we focused on a lot of animation because it's his passion, and it was great to get his insight. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and please step into my office. Hello and welcome back to an episode of Michael's Office. I have a guest on, like I told you guys last week. I am so thankful to have a guest on. We've been planning it for a little bit. He said he wouldn't be available till August because of the school year, and I was so glad that I brought him on. He's been on the podcast before in a group episode where we talked about our favorite films from 2022, and that was a really great episode. You guys should go listen to that, and I'm glad that I brought him back. And we're in a group chat, and he always has these really composed answers and responses to all these things. And generally, even when he was younger, he's always he felt wise beyond his years, and it's been a joy to have conversations with him, either on podcast or even before the podcast, before we were talking. It's a real joy to have these conversations with him, and I'm so glad for you guys to be introduced to him. So, TJ, please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. My name is TJ, but you might know me for the name Zombie T-Rex or Zombie Trex on Letterboxd. I like to watch movies and stuff. I obviously I'm not great at introducing myself, but yeah, that's just kind of like what I like to do. It's like a hobby for me.
Mm-hmm. You're in college. What are you in college for? And is this your first year, second year?
This is my second year. I'm trying to get into the one of the animation tracks. Mm-hmm. Those require a portfolio review, which I'm working on, but that's generally what I want to get into.
And what does that entail? Does that entail like taking art classes to hone your craft and your style? Is it taking some filmmaking style, like classes, some master classes? What does that really entail, per se?
I mean, I always tell people I'm heading towards this track, and they always think I took like straight up animation classes, but no, that comes later. Uh-huh. It is just doing like 3 to 6 hour drawing classes where you just sit and draw a lot, and like it's tiring, but like if you're really into drawing like I am, it's like it's fun to draw out all that stuff. And there are some like classes I took for it, because you know you need prereq classes. Mm-hmm. That are like you learn a bit about like filmmaking and framing. Right now I'm taking a 3D art design where we make sculptures and stuff, so just artsy stuff all around. And then once you get through, you get to actually animate.
Fantastic. And then when it comes to the art, do you like, are you focusing on like, when it, like have you gotten to the model stage where somebody comes in to model, or like there's a something in the middle of the room and then you have to draw it or paint it or something along those? Is it more focused on drawing, or is it more focused on painting, or is it a mixture of the two?
Definitely more on like just drawing it out with pencils. Haven't really done much painting, although they expect you to know how to color, so I'm gonna have to figure out how to do that. But it's mostly, there is a class where you do a lot of nude modeling. Mm-hmm. Which it's kind of awkward at first, but you just kind of get used to it. Mm-hmm. And it is like, enjoyable in like a weird way, but like it is really interesting to draw out the figure, because the human body is so much fun to draw, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Just how it's shaped, you know, differently shaped people. I did like that class a lot, even if I was not the best in there.
Does the person usually talk at all? Like, does somebody make a joke and then the person laughs, or is it usually just very focused and serious and then the person leaves?
I mean, you can tell who's into it and who feels awkward about it. And I mean, I don't blame them in the slightest. Like, there'll be the people who will just be there, and because the thing is, they have to stand there for like a good chunk of time. Like, they get breaks, but like, they're just standing in one position, trying not to move. And then you got the people who are weirdly into it. Like, there's this one guy, I remember, I mean, he's probably cool because he was willing to do this for all of us, but he like brought in a staff and was doing like Olympian poses. And I mean, I've never struck up a conversation with one of them, but I know classmates who have, you know, they're like perfectly average people.
Okay, so there's nobody like, I mean, probably there's some people who are awkward about it. They're not like mean or cold. They're just like, I just want to get this over with. Okay.
Yeah.
And other classes that you've taken, has there been a big focus on storytelling? And then that'll be like a thing in your toolbox. Have you been making sure you remember all the things you've learned? Because sometimes with the American education system and how we're taught, it is, learn this thing, all right, move on to the next thing, forget about it. Test, you know, is that what you're kind of focusing on right now? Like, instead of doing that, I want to learn, make sure that, or is it just sometimes it just happens?
I totally feel that with some classes that I take, some aren't related, some not. But for the most part, art is less about memorizing a certain set of facts and more muscle memory, you know, like when drawing a face, you just instinctively know to draw something this way or that way. And yes, I have been taking some, there are some classes that are filmmaking centric. So you learn stuff like shot types and you create animatics, but once you do those things enough, it starts to feel like second nature. And it also helps that I'm interested in that stuff, whereas if it were like a U.S. history course, I wouldn't really care to remember.
So animatics, so like the ones you see on YouTube where people are like lip syncing videos and stuff like that, or is it something not that kind of, I don't want to, maybe there are people who are passionate, sometimes I can get really cringy and stuff, not to that level, right? Or is it just like,
I get what you're saying. No, it is funny because I remember one example, like, they told us to do an animatic, and one of the examples they used as to what to follow was one of those like cringy fan made animatics that made me like, oh geez.
Yeah.
But the idea for this one, at least the one I made, was that you're supposed to create a modern interpretation of like a classic tale or like fable, and you just animate a story. And the thing about, I mean, do you generally know what animatics are?
It's just to, from what I understand, it's like to give you an idea of what the final product will look like. For like deleted scenes, they are animatics. Like deleted scenes in animated movies, those are animatics. They're giving you an idea of what the thing's going to look like.
Right. That's usually what they'll base the animation off of. And that's, you know, essentially what they did there. And I mean, obviously the reason that, you know, the people online doing animatics don't fully do animations because animation's hard, and doing an animatic, I imagine, is more fun. So that's generally how it went, and I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of work, but I really enjoyed actually making it.
Cool. Have you done anything yet? Have you made any short films or anything along those lines?
I did in high school. I was taking a film class where you would essentially just watch films, but you'd also make them. And I made it a point to make all of my films animated. So I got like a free animation app for like my old iPad and just drew some up. I don't, did I show you guys one of them? I think
You may
I
have.
know.
I may have logged it on Letterboxd. Did you put it on Letterboxd? I've
Wow.
logged. I usually log people's short films on Letterboxd.
No, I could, I was thinking about it because I remember Sam put one of his up on there. But then I thought, you know what? I do not want to face the fury of what the internet might have to say about it. Because, like, it's not great, but I enjoyed making it. And generally, I thought it, if I had more time and more skill at that time, I thought I could have made it, like, pretty good. And, like, nowadays, I'm just focusing all my efforts on getting a portfolio review done. Though it does require an animated short of some sort, so I'm gonna have to make one.
Going back a little bit, why the username Zombie T-Rex? So, is
So
it was it like a as a little kid, you're like, I like zombies and I like dinosaurs, so Zombie T-Rex, I'll take that.
close. In middle school, I was in a friend group, and we all had like gamer names or like
What?
Minecraft names.
Oh, of
So
course.
like, one guy was named like Hermes, and one guy was named like Cello Gamer. And I chose Zombie T-Rex because I mean, you ever played Jetpack Joyride? It's from that. And it's like, you know, a zombie, a T-Rex? That's so cool. And I
Wait.
just used it for like every username I've had to create since, whether it's like a gaming account or Letterboxd. And I kind of wish I didn't, just because now that I'm more familiar with it, I realize everyone uses their real name. And I'm like, the one guy, I'm like, you know, you got Michael Cox, Quentin Phillipson, Zombie Trex.
Well, there's some big users who don't use their real name.
Yeah.
Unless you don't, as much as some people don't like it, like I'm fine with her. Sometimes I get really annoyed. Brad Pitt doesn't use her real name.
That's not his real name? Brad
No,
Pitt.
it's not her. What's another, Silent Dawn is another person who doesn't. He's pretty top on the site. He doesn't use his name. Maybe he Dawn is his name. Maybe his name is Dawn. I don't know. Or maybe that's his
And he's
not.
silent.
He's silent. So okay. Very cool. And why the focus on animation? Why has that become your passion? Why what started that per se?
I mean, not to give you my whole
Life story.
complicated life story, but as a kid, I remember I drew a lot. Like I'd always draw these little comic books, and I always wanted to do that. And as I grew older, I kind of moved away from it and just wasn't doing it as much. And originally, I was like, when I grow up, I want to be an engineer or an architect, because I guess building and designing stuff was cool or something.
Probably
And
also
so I took,
Minecraft. Did you play Minecraft when you were younger?
I really didn't that
Oh.
much. I actually, I, what might have inspired it more was Legos.
Yeah, probably.
Because Legos were awesome,
They
but
are. They are. Were you a Bionicle kid?
I always wanted to make like a city in it, you know?
Yeah.
Like I was always into anything city building related. But then, so I in high school I took the classes to be an engineer. I didn't take a single art course until my final year of high school during the pandemic year. But basically, like I took those, and that was kind of my plan. And when you get to that age, like late in high school, everyone's always asking you, like, what are you going to be when you grow up? And that's what I would answer. And I found it kind of hard to get excited about. I just couldn't be like, man, I'm going to grow up and have to do all of these equations and building stuff. And my dad, he pulled me aside and was like, okay, you're clearly not into this. You're clearly not into being an engineer. And he was so right about that. And And he told me, like, yeah, you probably want to do something that you're more passionate about. And it was around this time when I kind of rediscovered my love of animation, partially due to the pandemic, because everyone's inside, watching stuff. But then also just the internet had kind of pushed me towards that. And also Letterboxd started checking out animated movies on there. And it just kind of culminated in me re-inspiring that love of storytelling and art. And I was like, you know what? I want to give this a shot.
What particularly about it draws you to it? What particularly about animation? Because everybody has a different reason. Is it that childlike wonder, the nostalgia that you have from watching them as a kid? Is it just the art styles and the creativity? What particularly draws you in to it? I mean, that could be also a very hard question because for every medium of and genre of film, there's always different things that draw you in. But since you're so passionate about it, what particularly to you drive makes you passionate or drives you crazy or fuels your fire?
I think it's just I guess two things really. One, it just feels a lot more natural to me than having to just standard live action filmmaking, get everyone together, filming, anything could go wrong. Because I'm part of like a filmmaking club on campus. I've taken part in a lot of these, and it's fun at points, but it's hectic. But I'd say the bigger reason is I just find animation to be the most limitless form of storytelling there is, because you want to make it, just draw it, I'm not saying there's like no drawbacks to animation in terms of storytelling, but to me at least, it will always be the most boundary pushing medium there is for filmmaking and storytelling.
So passionate about it. Do you have any plans for a feature film in the future? Possibly not, maybe in the near future, but in the future, definitely, like
Yeah, I
definitively.
it's way too early to be thinking like, oh, I'm gonna just get out there and make a Pixar film. But it's weird. I have ideas for stories, but none of them are actually feature films. They're all either ideas for like a longer episodic story format, or they're like short stories. I actually don't really have any big ideas for like a whole feature film. I'm not opposed to creating one, because that sounds like a lot of fun, but as of now, I don't have any solid ideas for one.
Okay. Well, then what stories do you want to tell if you ever and you ever get the opportunity and just people behind it give you like full rein. What stories are ideas for stories you want to tell?
I mean, if you want to get specific, I have this one very big sci-fi apocalyptic, but fun story that I've been slowly but surely chipping away at in my mind. Like if I'm ever bored, I'll just think, man, I can think of cool ideas for this one story. And it's like a big thing, so it's like a lot of moving parts, but it's just like a story that I really like, that takes inspiration from other stories that I like. And I also, like I said, I have a lot of short story ideas that could be shorts that are just like little, they're like just based on, this my experiences and the way I see the world, which is ultimately what you'd want out of art, right? You'd want to see the artist's perspective. And that's kind of where I'm at. I will say I should probably write some of this stuff down. I don't think I have anything actually concretely written down. So if I forget everything, I guess that's that.
I mean, I think writing stuff down would help because usually you have all these ideas. And I remember I had a couple ideas for plays, and then I just never wrote them down and I completely forgot about them. And I did have these ideas, but then they weren't fully fleshed out. Like I had a concept in mind for something and it just didn't work out. So there's that. Yeah, I agree.
You
But it
want to
also
write
means
plays?
like what?
You want to write plays?
Oh yeah, I love writing plays. I wrote one when I was younger in a creative writing class, which was about like basically after the story of Rumpelstiltskin. Rumpelstiltskin sued the princess for like tricking him. And so there's a whole trial, and I actually like did a bit of research. I like made sure I got the terms right. How did it just go? Rumpelstiltskin still lost. Sorry to spoil it, but he still lost. Because I think his lawyer, I think he had the defense attorney for the princess pointed something out, and I think poked holes in his witness's testimony, the Rumpelstiltskin's both Rumpelstiltskin's testimony and one of his witnesses' testimony, and then brought in another witness. I can't remember. That was the I think. Used the princess's testimony and another witness. I think it was either the king or something. I can't remember. But it was just poked holes, and then Rumpelstiltskin still lost. And then I wrote one that just recently, which is going to be my senior capstone. I still need to rewrite that and cut it down. And then I just finished one 10-minute play that is just. Not based on anything. It's I had an idea for it. It was just basically a couple gets into a fight. The boyfriend says something like not cool, like not good at all, and then that really upsets the girlfriend. And then it immediately turns into something psychological where he's on trial for what he said, and he it's and then there's that. And then I have another play in mind, which is a full length play. Where it takes place in the Old West and it's in the saloon, and three guys are playing poker. They're playing poker, and tensions rise throughout. And I want it to be about how, even back then, I don't think this was truthful back then, but how discourse and has devolved into something less civil. And I want to use, and especially being a metaphor for now on social media and how we've kind of reduced ourselves to shouting matches and how civil discourse has died. So I wanted to explore that. Those are my ideas for plays and stuff, and maybe a feature film sometime. But yeah, thank you for asking that question, D-Rex.
Those all sound like really fun ideas, I think. I'd love to eventually see one of those.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna record my capstone because it's my capstone. But that one won't be.
Oh, you actually get to like put on a production of it?
It's gonna be a stage reading, so people are just gonna read it. So yeah,
Right.
that's probably as far as I'm gonna go.
Okay.
But
That's
now
still
let's
cool.
get a before we let pivot into something completely unrelated to you. What are some? Could you list some films that be inspirational to you in oh, let's also talk about your art style as well, but inspirational to you as an animation artist, and what are you if you had a style, or if you do or don't have a style per se as an anime artist.
Thing it, I like. I don't know if I'd say I have a perfect style mapped out that I can distinctly call my own at this point. I feel like I probably should, but in terms of media that inspired me to, and like the stuff I based on the stuff I want to make, and that I draw inspiration from, I usually point to three main things: Spirited Away. Because that's like what really got me down the animation rabbit hole, and it just really opened my mind to what animation can accomplish. Then there was Over the Garden Wall, which I just think is, I know I rant about it every October, but it is just so, it affected me in such a way where like just the themes, the storytelling, the fact that it's just this one succinct little mini series, it changed the way I looked at art. It just blew my mind. And third, gonna get a little nerdy here, One Piece.
The One Piece is real.
Look, I hate that meme. It makes no sense.
I don't watch One Piece, so I think it's hilarious. I love all the little slideshows and the song.
It's based on one of the most important moments in the entire series, and now I can't enjoy that moment anymore. Because what's the joke? I don't get the joke.
I think it's just the way, I don't know. I think it's just the fact that it's like the One Piece is real, and then it's just a bunch of these like different images. I think it's mainly because of, what is it, Scooter? Is it Scooter or Shooter? The one dog, that's like crying, is because that image that's like
very. Oh, Chopper?
Chopper.
He's a reindeer.
He's a reindeer? What the heck? He looks like a little dog. What do you mean?
Long story short, he ate a magic fruit that made him so he can be kind of human-esque.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah, but like to the uninitiated, yeah, he looks like a dog. But back to the actual discussion. No, I think it's just, in my opinion, it is the greatest story ever told. Mm-hmm. It's not even finished yet. Like One Piece is real, but they haven't found it yet.
So the last season's them going to be finding the One Piece, of course.
There's also going to be a big war thing. I, you know, not get too much into it because no one's going to know what I'm talking about. But yeah, it still hasn't ended, but like, it didn't quite get it took to me at first, because I mean, with over 1,000 episodes, I read the manga, so it's like chapters, but it's one of the most impressive worlds I've ever seen, and that's what I love about it. The world building is like on another level. Like, it's better than, like, in my opinion, better than like Lord of the Rings or something, because it's just so multi-layered, mm-hmm. and well faceted, and just everything is so connected. And that's what I ultimately want to do, is I want to make a world that just has all these little facets that all connect together and just create this living, breathing environment for characters to have stories. Because that's what One Piece does very expertly.
Mm-hmm. And now let's take a left pivot to, I had this conversation with my previous guest, but I want to get your input on it. Since you feel like you're paying attention a lot more than the both of us, how do you feel about the direction of the MCU? Like, do you feel like it's going on the right spot? Do you feel like it's starting to go downhill? I know we're both connected to it. We're both watching since the beginning, but how do you feel about it right now?
I think at this point, I'm just here for the ride. Mm-hmm. My enthusiasm for this universe you'll hear everyone say this, but it peaked at Endgame. And I think there was definitely ways it could have continued off from Endgame. And here's the thing, straight up, I do not hate anything from Phase 4. I think that it's all been, at the very least, okay. But it's just, I think there's a lot more mediocrity and there's just too much. I mean, back in, I guess, the good old days, like Phase 2, Phase 3, you would have like 3 movies a year. And I think that's perfect. It makes every time you get to check in on this universe special. But nowadays we get like 4 movies a year, plus like 4 shows, hours upon hours of content. And for me, I think the shows really killed some of my enthusiasm. Like, they were fun at first, but
yeah,
we got too many of them. And I don't think they've really nailed the TV format. They either feel like stretched out movies, or they aren't particularly well-written TV shows. And that's not to say there's nothing good out of Phase 4. I really enjoyed No Way Home, Shang-Chi, Loki. But it's just not as consistent as it was previously. And there are things I'm looking forward to, but instead of being excited for anything the MCU had to offer, now it's just, I'm excited for Guardians and this and that, but there's not much I can say about, I don't know, the Echo show or the Fantastic Four reboot.
I mean, I'm excited for the only reason I'm excited for the Echo show. I need to watch She-Hulk and a bunch of MCU shows. But the only reason I was pretty much excited for She-Hulk, to be honest, was because Daredevil was coming on. And I mean, I was interested in seeing She-Hulk. I think She-Hulk's an interesting character, but I was more excited because it was Daredevil was coming back. And then same thing for Echo. Daredevil's going to be on there, so I'm excited for that.
Fair.
So it's for you, it's just like you want to coax and like you're just seeing what just along for the ride. Do you think the MCU is going downhill, or do you just like let's be patient, let's see how this turns out, let's see if they're going to figure out their groove again?
I think about it, and I think that this was always destined to happen. It eventually start it either run out of steam or Disney would really put a stranglehold on it to really pump cash out of it. So this point really is just it was always going to happen. But I just think that because I don't want to say it's gone downhill because I am very, or at the very least I was passionate about these films, right? I've been going to them ever since I was a kid, and so many other kids my generation have been, but I can't say that I'm enjoying the ride as much as I was previously. And again, that's just because they've been stretched too thin.
Do you feel like the MCU is playing catch up? Because originally a number of these projects were slated to release in 2020 and 2021. Do you feel like they're playing catch up?
Because of pandemic and all that. I think it has definitely resulted in the sort of overwhelming amount of content. I think you're right about that, that definitely had an effect on it. But even so, I do think that we would still be feeling, if the pandemic had never happened, we would still be feeling this problem on this basis. I don't know if the pandemic is responsible for the quality of these shows. Like, you can never really know. Would these have turned out the same had circumstances been different? But I will say a lot of them just kind of feel like we want to, they feel less like someone had a great story to tell and more like we really want this character in the MCU, right? Or we want to give this MCU character a thing. That's why they made Black Widow. That's why they made the Eternals. It's because they want these characters in the MCU, not because they have an interesting story they can tell with these characters in the MCU.
A friend brought this up in the previous podcast, and I agree with him. Do you think we're being brought back to square one? Like it's back to the phase one again? Because if we remember in phase one and phase two, they didn't really have a lot of hits. We have fondness for them because of nostalgia, but do you think we're back to square one? Phase one.
I think, I mean, that depends on what your opinion is of phase one and phase two, because I feel like everyone kind of agrees phase three was like the really fun era. The thing is, I have reference for those old movies. Obviously, I can point to like, Thor and Thor 2 or like Iron Man 2, but those movies I felt were necessary to build it up. And I feel like those are more worthy of an excuse because they were trying to get their footing on what this universe was. And again, it was a first of its kind deal with all of these movies that connected to each other. But nowadays, being hit or miss, the thing is, yes, it is hit or miss, much like the olden days, but it has less of an excuse because we are so fully used to the MCU at this point. It is so, everyone knows about it. So Actually, I thought of this idea the other day. I think that we the audience, we all grew up, but the MCU didn't alongside us. It hasn't figured out how to properly evolve, especially with how over monetized it is nowadays.
Do you think that's because Disney's wanting to keep their family-friendly look to them, or is it just because they're never playing? Do you think it's Disney's fault that they stayed this way, or do you think they haven't considered that?
I think part of it is Disney, I think there are you could make the series more mature, and that could be a route to take it, but they want to keep it family friendly. But I also think that, like I said, this was inevitable. Once you reach the heights of Endgame, where do you have left to go and be as satisfying as that conclusion? I guess you could, because this is the multiverse saga, but I don't know, what does that really entail?
Well, I would think it could possibly entail a lot of what the maybe the direction the MCU is taking, maybe just a focus on. Focus, I hate saying this in a derogatory sense, focus on cameos and eliciting nostalgia from people. That's what the direction the MCU could be taking right now is focusing on that.
That's another
Possibility.
group.
It's a possibility. That's what I wanted to point out.
It that's another thing is that mentality has really taken over. You bring up a good point, because this has also really been infecting Star Wars as well, this kind of cheap nostalgia. Like, I think No Way Home did it pretty well, and I
I
think it's
agree.
certainly possible for these films to do nostalgia well.
Right.
But then I think that so much of why I like current Marvel stuff is a lot because of old stuff. Doctor Strange bringing back all the characters. I mean, they just announced Deadpool 3 with Wolverine coming back, and it doesn't feel confident enough in itself, in its own ideas, to be its own thing. It has to keep bringing back these old characters, and that's fine as an every once in a while thing, but I'm starting to get a little tired.
So, now that we're done with that, I want to talk about some film industry news. And this is more centered on Warner Bros. And what's going on with them. So, this is old news, but I still want to talk about it and get your thoughts on it. First up, this is just bad. It's basically a series of bad news. We're just going on the negatives right now. So, first off, Warner Brothers cancels Batgirl. I know this is old news, but I still want to get the thoughts into the open. They cancel Batgirl. What are your thoughts on that?
I think like we hear about movies getting canceled all the time. Like I'll see a news headline that said like, "Oh, the Green Lantern TV show was canceled," and we won't think much of it. But I think this is different. This and a lot of people forget that it wasn't just Batgirl, but it was also we must also mourn the loss of Scooby Holiday Hunt.
Correct.
But this is different because those films were almost completed. Whereas with normally it's canceled very early on. And it's just one of those things. Like I can't say that I'm all that broken up about the fact that I'll never see Batgirl. Because truth be told, I don't think it would have been that great. But it's the precedent it sets that it at any point, even late into the game, when you're almost finished with something that you've dedicated years of your life towards, that it can be just swiped off the map, just at the whims of some CEO on top who doesn't understand the value of what you may have been doing, right? Because even if the film were good or bad, you still had people dedicating all this time to making it the best it could be. And I have so much respect for them, but it's just like, that's all gone now.
And also they wrote it off as like a tax write-off, despite it being cost like $90 million or something like that.
Yeah, just there, to be fair, like when it comes to this HBO Max business, there's a lot of conflicting, not necessarily conflicting, but there's a lot of ideas thrown around of why they're doing all of this stuff. And obviously the big one is tax write-offs. And that is pretty disappointing that just that I mean I don't I'm not an, I can't claim to be an economics guy, so I don't know how the math works out on that, but it I don't know. It sucks that it'll never get to stand on its own and exist on its own merits. Now it'll always just be that thing that might be on a hard drive somewhere on the Warner Brothers office, but we'll never see it. I honestly, I really hope it leaks online. Like that'd be great.
Yeah.
We could get one guy to take the fall, just upload it to YouTube, and then once it's done, it's out there and it'll never go away. I like it.
Fair. I mean, Warner Brothers will try their darndest to get rid of it, but you know, if, by you mean somebody taking the fall, that means like somebody going to prison, possibly.
Yeah. You know what? I'll do it.
You'll sneak into Warner Brothers headquarters and find.
I'll get a job there and work my way up so I can find that hard drive, upload it, go on the lam. It's a to also the internet can see Batgirl.
Oh, fantastic. I appreciate your sacrifice. Your sacrifice is it's for the greater good. For the greater
For the
good.
greater good.
For the
That's
greater
like that is my second favorite movie of all time.
Oh, I need to see it. I just know the bit about the for the greater good, and
You
also
haven't seen Hot Fuzz?
no. I haven't seen Shaun of the Dead either or Baby Driver.
If you watch the Cornetto trilogy, it's like the best trilogy.
I need to. But again, more moving on to more some more negative stuff. Also, one more thing about Batgirl. We were going to see Brendan Fraser play a villain for the probably. I think I don't know if he's played a villain before, but I think the first time. Well, he was a villain in No Sudden Move, but for the he was playing a villain in a major movie. He was going to play Firefly, and I hear his performance was really good there.
Yeah.
So it sucks that we're not going to see his take on Firefly, and this is also I'm pretty sure Firefly's debut in live action. I don't think he's been played before. He may have been, but as of right now, in a live action film, this is going to be his debut, which
Yeah,
sucks.
maybe one of the TV shows, but he was in it. But
Yeah.
like, yeah, Brendan Fraser, I think, dude, if they had waited a little bit to decide on whether to cancel it, not only could it have been finished, but they could have rode the Brendan Fraser hype train that
Yeah.
everyone seems to be on.
Yeah, I think, and that's the reason why I think they're hiring. That's why A24 hasn't really released a trailer for the whale because I think they fear the discourse surrounding the whale so much. I think they're just riding the hype train of the whale, and they're basing it all on Brendan Fraser. So I
Is
think
it,
they're.
is that going to be like a controversial movie, you think?
It's gonna be because I've read the play. I don't think there is much thing for discourse, but there's going to be. I think there's going to be. There's already been some discourse before the film even came out, and it's going to just get worse when it is released.
Right.
Releases wide. The play is already controversial in the theater world, and the playwrights. Not is like is also mixed. He's based mixed reactions. The play is divisive in the theater world. Some people love it. Some people really don't like it. It just all depends on that. But now I want to move on to my next topic, which is Ezra Miller faces criminal
Oh.
felony charges and pleads not guilty. I mean, that's and it's for burglary. If I'm not mistaken, or like robbery or something, like they've done something really bad, and they plead not
Yeah.
guilty. This is just And this is the only, that's not, they just have, not only have they done that, they've done other things as well, like they're running a cult. So it's like, and it's crazy that that this is going on. Do you think if Warner Brothers, since Warner Brothers is moving forward with the Flash, first off, what do you think this means for the Flash? Secondly, do you think Ezra Miller's gonna win their case if Warner Brothers has full backing, like they sent their best lawyers to defend Ezra Miller? Or do you think Ezra Miller's gonna go to jail and they're not gonna be able to promote the Flash anymore?
I mean, he's a celebrity, so or they're a celebrity, so I just I don't think they're going to jail, just straight up. That I've kind of trained my mind to think that if a celebrity does something, they're probably not going to get just desserts. I mean, I hate to be like a downer like that, but but as in terms of how this affects the Flash, I mean, the whole thing is just incredibly unlucky. I found it kind of funny how he or how
Ezra
Ezra Miller
Miller.
is involved in not just one of Warner Brothers' biggest franchise, but two of them, because he also has a big role in the, or they also have a big role in Fantastic Beasts. So it's like they're heavily involved in both of them, and now they're just off the table. You don't want to work with this person anymore, but you have to if you want to release this movie. And I imagine that The Flash was supposed to be a very important movie, right? Because of the Michael Keaton Batman stuff. And I imagine it was supposed to be just, oh, it opens up this universe. It was supposed to be this launch pad for so many other things in this universe, but now they're just struggling to release it because, I mean, are they going to kill him? Are they going to kill off the Flash? Are they going to? I don't think that they can recast Ezra Miller at this point. I imagine that they are going to be very much not in as much of the advertising.
What I think they're going to do, there are rumors that somebody was going to be, they're going to recast the Flash, might have Wally West come in and do it, or they just might recast Barry Allen. Let me check. There was a leak a bit ago about somebody possibly getting cast as a, oh, George McKay is rumored to be the next Flash.
Has he been in anything? I don't
He
know who
was
that
in
is.
1917. He was the main guy in 1917.
Mean, I haven't seen that movie, but
Oh,
people like it, so.
okay. He's done some stuff. He's done a lot of indie stuff, but his biggest film was 1917. He was really good, man. He's generally really good in everything he does. I still think his best performance is probably still 1917, but he's generally a really good actor, and I'm excited to see what he does. He also picks really interesting projects, but I would not be surprised. He might be Wally West. Who knows? He could also be Barry Allen. But I think what they're
It
going to
just,
do. Sorry, you go first.
I was about to say he gets like, or the Flash, Barry Allen just gets facial because of multiverse business. He gets facial dysmorphia or something. I don't know. I'm just remembering. Have you ever seen the movie Bolt?
Yes, I've seen both.
At the end of the movie, the child star quits the production. So they show how in the show they just cast a different actor and acted like her face got burnt off in like a fire, and they had to do a reconstruction surgery to cover up the fact that they had to recast or something, and they could do something similar here.
They could also just like Barry Allen, just like I can't, the one that's in. This one is like, I'm not gonna do this anymore, or like they kill Barry Allen off or something. They do something, but then somebody comes and replaces from another universe. And I like, and I want to go back to one of your points. This was probably gonna be their answer to No Way Home. Warner Brothers' answer to No Way Home. It was gonna be their No Way Home, from what I understand.
Because Michael Keaton was supposed to be in the new Batgirl,
Yeah.
and this was how they did it. This is they, I Michael Keaton, I'm sure, was supposed to appear in a ton of stuff, but then, well, train sailed on that.
Yeah.
And as for Ezra Miller, I don't know. I guess you have to get the movie done, so you have to call them in
Yeah.
to do reshoots. But the thing is, I don't think the film should be canceled.
No.
Because it wasn't just one person working on this. It wasn't just Ezra Miller. It was hundreds, potentially thousands of people dedicating years of their life to it. And I think that to have it all go to crap just because of one crappy person,
Yeah.
it's wrong. But at the same time, you don't really want to give them a platform. You don't want to promote Ezra Miller as much because he's a or they're a terrible person.
Yeah.
It's I do not envy Warner Brothers here. They got a mess on their hands.
And one final thing, which is I think the worst blow to you, and I think with what's going on right now with these two, with and if I want to comment, Disney made recently, Warner Brothers removed existence of a numerous cartoons like on HBO Max and YouTube. They're acting like it doesn't exist, and they probably got rid of it back at Warner Brothers headquarters. They removed numerous cartoons, and then also another thing which also is going to be disheartening, when I'll get into that later. I'll get into that later about a different topic. I'll get into that later about a different topic of what Disney, Bob Chapek said about animation later in the later topic. But yeah, they've removed existence of cartoons. How do you feel about that? I'm completely disheartened. I just saw all the tweets on Twitter about the animators responding to this and how heartbroken they are. And you brought it up earlier with Scooby-Doo being completely canceled and taken away. I mean, I like the Scooby-Doo, the Scoob movie, and I was excited. I was interested in anticipating its sequel, and I was like, oh, they're making a sequel. Okay, I want to see how that goes. But like, it's disheartening to see something as awful as this, and I don't even know why they did it. They're only keeping a few cartoons like Rick and Morty, and I think it's, what's another one they're keeping? I know Rick and Morty is the one of the few they're keeping, but like they've erased a lot of their cartoons.
Yeah, I mean the thing with it is they still are making cartoons. And you know that on HBO Max they still keep a lot of like the old Cartoon Network stuff, but it was mostly stuff that was made as an HBO Max original or made recently. And this one hit me hard because one of the shows what I feel has become the poster child for this. For all the cartoons that got canceled was Infinity Train. And the thing about Infinity Train is that it's like one of my favorite shows ever. I only finished it like right before all of this stuff started going down, but it's so good. It's like it has one of the most inventive premises I've ever seen for an anthology show. And like all the different ways they were able to do that across its 4 seasons was really great. And I mean, the thing is, the show already got screwed over because there were supposed to be like 8 seasons, I think, which I know might seem like a lot, but each season is only 10-minute episodes, and there's only 10 episodes, so it's not that much content. But it already got screwed over because it got canceled last year. But now that and along and just a ton of other shows, just like gone off the service, and then. They could have stopped there, but no, they went on to YouTube and Spotify and just scrubbed those shows from existence. And they've eased up on it a little bit, I've noticed, in terms of social media. But again, it's just such a slap in the face. And one of the creators came out and said it might be about tax breaks, but another part of it is residuals. Because if the show's not up, they don't have to pay the actors or animators any residuals, which is part of their contract. In fact, some of them relied on those residuals to pay their health care. And yeah, just like that, all gone. And always remember this one quote from one of the creators where it's like, sure, these shows still exist, right? They exist on certain websites that you can always go to and check these shows out, but kids can't, right? I wouldn't want my kid going on some piracy website because they don't know how to navigate it. I want them to check out something while on the kids section of one of these apps. And I don't know, the whole thing really sucks. And it's just, again, a huge slap in the face to artists anywhere. And I hope it discourages artists from working with them again, and then that'll pose a problem for them.
I think, I but also think this sets a precedent, which we'll talk about later. You know what? I'll just bring this point up later. It just sets a precedent for studios to not take animation seriously anymore and not focus on that. But I'll get into that again. I'll get in that point later. The next thing I want to bring up is, do you believe this probably won't be as in depth as like maybe some of the other ones. Do you believe Warner Brothers is the worst entertainment company out right now? Do you think it's doing more harm for its for the cons the con I hate being sounding like a this sounding like this, but do you think it's doing more harm for the customer than it is benefiting them? Do you think they're focusing more on themselves and making the most money possible? I know that's the goal of a company, but do you think they're more focused about making the most money possible instead of making the right decision and focusing on stuff on, in the long run?
I think that personally, that I think every company sort of gets their turn in the negative limelight. And right now it's Warner Brothers. I'm not trying to excuse their actions at all. In fact, I'm going to rail pretty hard on them. But I think the thing about them is that I think that with HBO Max, they bit off more than they could chew because they wanted this to compete with Netflix right out of the gate. So, and with their merger with AT&T, they just put out a lot of content. They did the whole in theater on HBO Max same day thing, and they were just trying to make this as appealing as possible. And in some respects, it worked because I really like the service. I think it's a good value with all the stuff it has, but it put them in $3 billion worth of debt. So now the new CEO, who's like involved with Discovery. Because now they're merged, they're trying to cut back on that and make it more profitable. So what does that mean? Well, you go straight for the stuff that the CEO doesn't understand and doesn't care about. Animation. I mean, to be fair, there were also like a bunch of the HBO Max original movies also got cut, like American Pickle or The Witches. But yeah, it's clear that the guy David Zaslav wants to cut as much meat off of it as possible, and just go straight for what he believes is not important. Which, I mean, I'm not gonna say he's right, but I at least kind of understand the reasoning. But I think it still does deserve respect in their ecosystem. I still do think that they don't respect it enough and what it's done for them. Because the thing is, this is kind of a separate point, but during the pandemic, when no one could do live action work, who stepped up to fill in more content? The animators who could work at home. And obviously, I could have a lot more to say about the whole situation. And but yeah, I guess my last point would be, it's just, we thought that streaming was going to solve all the problems of cable, right? And it felt like that for a while there, but now I think the bad parts of streaming are starting to rear their ugly head. Stuff like being able to take all this stuff down with no alternatives, and just way too many streaming services out there. It's not looking that great. Future ain't looking too bright.
If we were to compare it to, let's say, I think you brought up a lot of good points, and I think there possibly could be with all these really bad business decisions and cutting all these things. But if we were to compare it to something else, like maybe Netflix doing what they're doing right now, and they had their bad time, like people call them out. What Netflix is doing, raising the price while also cutting things down, focusing on creating the wrong shows and not focusing on making quality projects while the quality. You could look at Disney and how they're becoming a lot more lazy when it comes to the creative side. You could look at some other things as well. So maybe some other companies, but those are the ones that come to the top of my head. But I would say, as of right now, I think Warner Brothers is the worst because of all these recent bad business decisions, and I don't know if it's going to get any better. Maybe it can for maybe for their live action movies, but who knows? As of right now, it's not looking good.
Yeah. I think one worrying trend that is affecting not just HBO Max, but also Netflix is that they are really trying to push unscripted content. Like reality shows, especially like Love Island type ones, because they said that that is actually what brings them in the most viewership. With like people will put one of those like kind of trashy reality shows on in the background while they're just working. And I mean, HBO Max literally just merged with Discovery, which has its own streaming service. And what is it filled with? A bunch of crappy reality shows that people gobble up. And that's what they said, that Zaslav said, is that we want to move away from scripted things and more towards that. So that means no more great cartoons, no more great shows like Succession. I'm sure they'll still do stuff like that, but it'll be much lesser in the grand scheme of things. And they're definitely going to be a lot less willing to try new scripted things because, less risks.
And I think that's the thing. And with audiences, that they want to look first. People just want to like safe and secure, and sometimes risks pay off, and sometimes they don't. So since we're noticing a trend that CEOs aren't taking animation seriously, with what Z David Zaz Zaslav is doing, but Bob Chapek recently said that is he said in a statement that it's animations. He even believes that animation's for kids, and it's something that you can flip on so they can. I'm hype using hyperbole here, but he said that you can flip on to your kids, and it's mainly for them, and it's just something you can flip on to give them a distraction. Basically, boiling that down, I'm maybe using hyperbole or maybe misquoting or paraphrasing him badly, but generally it's quote. Boiled down to that. So my question to you is, how do we convince Western audiences and Western studios that animation is just as valid for adults as it is for children? How can we make it more and if it is and how can we make it more relevant to them rather than just be focusing on that it's just for kids?
Well, I think the root of the issue is that that's how animation is used by Western audiences or by Western studios, is for kids shows and kid movies. And I don't want to throw them any shade. In fact, I respect them because I feel like in recent times, a lot of these movies and a lot of these shows, even though they're made with kids in mind, they have become so much more appealing to people of all ages. I can think of so many great shows that are made for kids, but also appeal to anyone else in any other demographic. But I can understand, like, how do we get straight up animation that is for everybody? And I think it's just that studios need to realize that there is a market there. And on our end, we have to show that there is a market there. Support things that, like, the on occasion, the one or two times a studio will actually put something out, like an animated project out that isn't necessarily for kids. We should all watch it and thus show that it is something we want. And I think that the studios also need to put out good content like that. Like I think Netflix is actually, I know, Netflix hasn't been the best to animation this year, but they've created shows like Arcane and Castlevania that have gotten like really huge because they are animation and they're adult animation, but they aren't, like Family Guy. And I think that's the key because there is a market. I mean, anime is a big thing, not just in Japan, but here in the West, and people are willing to watch that stuff. And I am hoping that companies will start to take notice. And I think it's becoming too big for them to really ignore. Obviously, they should still make kids stuff. I think even Hayao Miyazaki said that animation should primarily be for kids because that's who it'll affect most. Which, like I get the sentiment, but I think it can be for everybody. I think that there are so many ways that you can tool storytelling and animation to make it so that we can tell more mature tales with darker themes. Because again, like I said, I think it's just the possibilities are limitless.
I agree. I think Arcane is a step in the right direction, and same thing with Castlevania. I don't think Arcane is meant for, I think it's not just meant for adults. I think young adults can find their find attachments to these characters. But I think with things like Arcane, I think something that really pushed in the right direction. Two things, really. Rick and Morty was one that pushed it and made adult, like adult animation, come alive and make and valuable market again. But also, like, I think Spider-Man and Spider-Verse, well, that was meant for children. I think that has such a wide appeal to audiences that it generated this idea and also helped generate the these varied animation styles, like the bad guys are Kane, and recently Intergalactic, which is definitely for adults since it's Kid Cudi's story. I think I still need to watch that, but I think that film has generated an opportunity for general audiences, families, and adults to really, and young adults and whoever, to enjoy this medium so been regarded as something for just children.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up so many great movies and shows, and I think that shows that because it's so limitless, because of all the things you can do, I find that animation is also one of the mediums where where the creators just get so experimental, where it's like they'll sometimes have to stick to certain genres. But I mean, look at something like I was hoping you'd bring this one up, BoJack Horseman, which
That's what was in my mind. I feel like BoJack, out of all the animated shows, excluding like Arcane, and we'll get that is like literally the next topic. I feel like BoJack Horseman is like pretty close to like childhood, but it looks good. Like in the clips I've seen, even when it gets like very like not experimental, but when it gets artsy and like focuses on this, it's like it's a lot more different than something that like compared to Family Guy or Big Mouth. Yeah, and besides, we'll get into those later. I keep saying all these things, but continue with your point.
like BoJack and you said Rick and Morty, they do fit into that sort of adult animated sitcom, but they're pushing the boundaries. And that's how we get newer, more experimental stuff like Arcane, like Intergalactic, where studios feel confident enough to put the effort into making animation for all ages. And obviously, I think Spider-Verse was like huge in all of that. Because again, it is a kids movie, but just its animation style. I honestly think that this sort of 3D, but sort of made to look like 2D, I think that is going to be the style for this generation. I mean, we've seen it in Spider-Verse, The Bad Guys, what was that? Mitchells versus the Machines, Arcane, especially. They just Intergalactic, they all just ran with it. And I think it's just I love the style. So And I think it also is just very appealing to everybody, and that again is helping spread the medium further.
There was an adult animated show for some reason that popped up. Another great example, anthology. It's like it was based on a podcast or something like that. And it was like very like trippy and weird. I love Dog
Fucking
Dan Ro
Midnight
Midnight Rev.
Gospel.
Yeah, Midnight Gospel.
I haven't seen that yet, but I've seen clips. It looks so interesting.
Like that's another adult animation. I think that's like oh yeah, Love, Death, and Robots is another adult animated show.
I was about to say that one. Yeah, that one's like really fun and experimental.
Well, it helps that it's an anthology, so same thing with Midnight Gospel. Like, I feel like these are people, like, I think people are starting to get, and I think we're stepping toward, like, I think adult animation. But speaking of adult animation, why? So, one of the more notable stuff, like Big Mouth, Family Guy, Simpsons, I think Simpsons is veered more toward, like, family, but it's, like, edgy family stuff. Like, but, like, Simpsons, Futurama, American Dad, like why, and Rick and Morty are solar opposites. Why does adult animation look like that? Is it because they want to separate from children's animation, or do they want to be like, we're adults, that we gotta look dirty and gross, and we gotta make sure that it's different, you know, we gotta show we're more mature.
I think that I get what you're saying with the how the art styles feel kind of homogenous, and especially nowadays, I feel like the animation quality has just sort of gone down for a lot of these shows. And I think it's an art style born out of necessity. Because a Simpsons, Family Guy, they need to make like a 20 episodes plus season every single year. So they need to cut corners. And because they're comedies, they're sitcoms, they don't need to get that experimental or like flowing movement from their animation. They don't need to do action scenes or anything. So the stiff, almost kind of robotic style works for them. And I think that, I mean, let's be real here. The Simpsons Family Guy, they're past their prime. They really don't need to be on the air anymore. As much as I love The Simpsons, it's just, and like that's the thing is that they create these really stiff storyboards, and then they'll send, because the thing is that the animation for these shows are not done in America. They're offsourced to Korean animation studios who just see the storyboards and they do the bare minimum. And I don't blame them for it because they're just doing what they got to work with. And of course, there's also shows like Rick and Morty that do sort of a puppet thing where they're like their models, but where they'll like bend the joints and of their arms and stuff to animate them like it's a 3D model. I think just why they all look like that is, it's trends, like The Simpsons, I would say, started this. Like how each the art style, like the eyes and the over-exaggerated features, it's, I think it can all mostly be traced back to The Simpsons really popularizing it, and then other artists added their own interpretation on it. And it's just as simple as people and creators wanting to follow the trends. So, yeah, which again, I don't blame them for, except for some shows, which I think really look ugly.
Names. I know it's bad to bring like bad to bring up negativity, but we've already kind of railed on the negativity. Why not? Do you have some that you're not super fan of, like art styles that you're not fan of? I don't like Big Mouth style at
Big
all.
Mouth. Big Mouth's the big one.
Maybe it's funny. I also don't think the humor appeals to me as well. Like it makes me feel uncomfortable. The show, I mean, I guess that's the point, but like it just really does. It makes me feel weird.
That's the thing. I think a lot of this has been spurred on by Family Guy and South Park with just really edgy, dark humor. And a lot of the time, the punchline is shock value. And I definitely think that, that's where Big Mouth operates. And I think like modern Family Guy, like old Family Guy, it's pretty good, but now it's just so mean-spirited and the jokes aren't funny. And that is definitely one of the ones that really gets on my nerves. And then there's just a lot of shows that are just like Paradise PD or Mr. Pickles, which are just their sole gimmick is that they're rude and offensive. And I think that's when adult animation is at its worst. It's just when it's all about being mean-spirited. And that's why I like shows like Rick and Morty, like BoJack Horseman, which are dark. They get dark, but there's a smarter side to them.
Oh, so if you watch Rick and Morty, it requires a high IQ to
I
understand.
knew I didn't want to say the joke, but I knew it was coming.
Hey,
Should not
you left
say
that open
that.
for me. You left that open for me.
Let's be real. There's more thought put into a script of Rick and Morty than like a Modern Family Guy episode.
That's fair. I agree. I agree with that. I don't think it's the meme, but or the copy pasta, but it's I'm not a huge fan of Rick and Morty. I watched Solar Opposites and I'm pretty similar to that. I felt like it was very mean-spirited. I'm like, everybody's so mean to each other. I don't like this. Like,
That can definitely ruin Rick and Morty for me at points. But I do think the writing is good enough to make me laugh at it. And I do think there are genuinely, like, I don't know if I'd say emotional, but meaningful moments.
I saw the finale. What was it? Was it season three? It was where Rick turns himself in, like the space prison or something like
End of
that.
season two.
End of season two. I'm like, oh, this seems really good, actually. Like that's a very meaningful ending. So yeah, I feel like I'm like I could watch it, but then the humor I feel like would just ruin the experience for
I
me.
get that. Or like there's these really horrifying sequences that aren't horrifying because of gore or something, but like just because of the concept. Like the one episode where they create a zombie apocalypse, and instead of fixing it, they just go to another universe where they're the version of themselves die and they take their place. Like it's kind of funny, but it's so dark and it got under my skin and I really love it.
Oh, that's dark.
Yeah, they just left their world to die. But it doesn't matter.
it doesn't matter. So we're gonna finish with two more topics, which I'm excited to talk about. Do you believe that anime is gonna become more accessible, or do you think it except not successful? I think it's gonna become even more successful. I think more people can watch it. Do you think it's become more accessible, or how do you believe to make it more accessible, and do you think it will become mainstream in the future?
Ooh, I think we're on a good path there. Because I'd say it's decently mainstream at this point. I see a lot more people talking about it. I see more people wearing shirts for it. And even in like Western culture, I see a lot more references to it. Like, yesterday I read that The Simpsons for Treehouse of Horror is going to do a Death Note parody.
Yeah, I saw that. Usually they're
And
Treehouse of Horror. Sorry for interrupting you, but usually the Treehouse, from what I understand, Treehouse of Horror has a really great reputation for always being great on The Simpsons. Like usually, despite The Simpsons failing and like the normal stuff, the Treehouse of Horror always has this level of respect, and people get excited for the next episode.
yeah, and it's just cool that like because they're always parodying the biggest in horror. That they're going for this, and I really like that. And there was also, I think, a football team did like, they always do a video about how they announced their schedule. And this one, they announced their schedule and they made it in the style of like an anime OP. And that was really funny. And I think that now with the internet and streaming, it's more likely that these shows will really pop off because, information spread about how cool something is. Like, I think back like to the last decade, I just think to how big stuff like Attack on Titan or like My Hero or One Punch Man got, where it's like even people who didn't regularly consume the medium, they got into these shows because they actually kind of made it big. And obviously everyone, even if you haven't watched them, you know what like Naruto or Dragon Ball is. Is there more room to go? Obviously, yeah, I think there's still sort of a stigma around it. Like, I know people who refuse to watch any anime on principle, and I can understand why, because there are cultural differences that can make some aspects of anime a little off-putting at first.
Yeah.
But I think people need to generally get over that and realize that not every anime is the exact same. You know, it's not all just one homogenous thing that you either like or don't like. There's probably going to be a couple out there that you do like. But thankfully now more people are catching on, like the Demon Slayer movie and like the Jujutsu Kaisen movie. Those did really well here in the States. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would want to say, I would want to say one thing, and that is to do my part and recommend some that I think that anyone can enjoy.
Yeah.
Mainly, I think of mainly three as sort of starters. I think Death Note, Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, and Cowboy Bebop. Those ones are very accessible. They have stories that I think anyone can enjoy. They all have like really good English dubs. Mm-hmm. And for Letterboxd users out there, you can log and review all of them.
I'm pretty sure, from what I've listened to, I don't think Cowboy Bebop, I don't think Cowboy, my main problem with anime is the voice acting, like the voice acting isms, the like, oh, and the way they do it. I know that's maybe a cultural thing, but that's the reason I'm hesitant to watch it, because I get.
Do you watch sub or dub?
I watch both. I watch generally like the animes I've seen clips of. It's usually just like dub, so it's a lot of that stuff kind of annoys me. I need to watch stuff in sub, but like I think sub is better than dub, especially when it comes to like foreign films and stuff. But like,
For live action, dub is weird. Like, let's just
yes. Yeah. But like, if I get the chance to watch it in the original language, I'll take it.
Right, and I think that if you want a consistently good experience, you go with sub. But there are dubs that I would honestly say are better than the original, like those that I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Obviously, your choice, and sub is certainly a great way to go about it. But I think that most people, when they try to get into anime, they'll inevitably start with the dubs.
Yeah. When it comes to the sub, do they get rid of all like the voice acting isms, or is there still like the stuff that I'm kind of annoyed about? Like they're voicing all their emotions, and they're like just do it. That stuff kind of annoys me sometimes. Again, the reason, like for me, if I think anime would become a lot more mainstream if they kept the art style, but the voice acting was something along the lines of Ghibli or like a Satoshi Kon, where they just voice it normally and ditch all that. In my opinion, that's just my opinion. Maybe that's the charm of anime for some people, but for me, the appeal of the animation's gorgeous, but it, to me, it's my experience is drawn back by the voice acting cliches.
I get that. And the thing about, I don't want to get into all of it here, but the English language and the Japanese language are very different. So translating it is going to be hard with stuff like different variations on the same language, or like pronouns and stuff like that. And it's never going to be a one-to-one translation. And there's going to be some awkward parts when you have to do like an English dub.
Yeah.
Because sometimes reading a cringy scene is a lot better than hearing it in your native language.
Yeah.
I think you do grow to like some of that stuff, and obviously not every anime has stuff like it in it, though again it is sort of a prevalent thing just because of how the two cultures can communication is just fundamentally different. Like some, like explaining feelings like that might be more of a writing thing in Japan.
Yeah.
And you know, it's obviously going to be a bit awkward, but I think ultimately, the dialogue oftentimes is not what I'm there for. It's for like the engaging stories they can tell.
Yeah. That's completely fair.
I get why someone would be off put by that. Which is why certainly I wouldn't suggest like every anime for every person, because there's just going to be some stuff that'll never click, and that's okay.
Okay. Finally, thank you so much for talking with me. But the final topic is, what are some of your most anticipated films for the rest of 2022?
All right. I guess I'm just going to go right back to the topic we were just talking about, because I'd say my number one most anticipated film for the rest of the year, it's got to be the new One Piece film. It's coming out
Oh.
in a week. I already got my tickets, because things I haven't been seeing a lot of new movies recently. I've just been really busy. And obviously I can't explain everything about why I'd want to watch this movie, because you wouldn't get it, but like this one's like a special movie, because it's like it's hard to explain, but it's about a character who is very important but very rarely shows up. If I had to explain it to someone who hasn't read or watched the show, it's like imagine if Gandalf showed up at the beginning of the Lord of the Rings and just didn't show up until the very end, and that was something you were looking forward to. That's basically what this character that the movie is about. So that's why I'm excited. And then I think for anything else, I'd say probably the new Disney movie coming out,
Strange
Strange
World?
World, which I'll
Yeah.
admit the trailers don't look amazing, but I think it shows potential.
I like the teaser. The teaser, I
Teaser
like.
was great.
Yeah.
But then they started with the jokes, and I was like, this is a bit iffy.
Yeah. I mean, I laughed at them, but I'm not going to say they're top tier jokes. I'm like, oh, that was chuckle worthy.
They were a little too Marvel-esque for, and I usually like Marvel humor. But I tend to go into Disney movies not with that mindset. But again, I
Sure.
don't want to put limitations on what they can and can't do. And as for anything else, for me at least, I don't. There are movies I'm excited for in a year, but usually what I find to be when I'm done with the year, like the best movies from that year are the movies that I didn't see coming. You know, they are the films that, you heard about like a week before they released, then you went to see them and they were really good, because it's the movies that. It's not the movies you're excited for, it's the movies that kind of sneak up on you and just become a big hit. Like, I hadn't really heard of Everything Everywhere until it started really gaining traction. And yeah, that's probably going to be my favorite movie of the year. I don't think a movie's going to come out that will match how good that movie was.
I don't know.
But
There's
yeah, what about
numbers.
you?
For me, there's a lot I'm really excited about. I'm really excited for Damien Chazelle's Babylon. I'm really excited for
Forgot about that.
there's Steven Spielberg's The Fame, a lot of Oscar stuff. I'm excited for. I'm excited for Wakanda Forever. I'm excited
That
for
looks good.
it. It's so good. It looks like possibly Marvel's best project to date. Not best. In a while. I'm excited for Moon. I haven't seen it yet, but Moon. I want to watch Moon Age Daydream. I could keep going on and on. The Whale. I'm excited for all the Beauty and the Bloodshed. I'm excited for Broker. I'm excited for Decision to Leave. All Quiet on the Western Front. There are multiple movies.
Isn't that coming out Friday?
It's coming out Friday, which you guys should watch. it's coming out Friday on Netflix. Not a sponsor, but
Yeah.
I'm excited for so many movies.
I
And
mean, because this. Sorry, go
no, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Because, like, this is the time when the movies come out. It's Oscar season. You got to release your movie now. So I feel like this is when we get just an influx of great movies. Some Oscar bait, but ultimately, I think we just get so many great movies in this time frame, like the last
Yeah.
months of the year.
December, basically October through December is the time. It's the time. And maybe some
Yeah.
stuff in January. That's
Look,
not
we've already
before 2022.
gotten Black Adam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The hierarchy of Disney, not Disney.
Yes.
The hierarchy of DC has changed. The hierarchy of power has changed.
I still haven't seen it yet. I'm trying to, because I always got to see Marvel in DC with my brother and my dad, because they live like 2 hours away. So I think I'm going to try and see it this weekend. I got to know, does the, without too much spoilers, does the hierarchy of the fucking DC thing change?
You can say in a way it does. You could say in a way it does, but some things happen and it's like they kind of change. In a way, yes. In a way, yes.
I mean, I've been pretty thoroughly spoiled on like that thing that
Yeah.
I'm sure people are hyped for.
Generally speaking, it does. The Black Adam's a very powerful character.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's as iconic as DC is trying to make him out to be, but yeah. It's like a,
Yeah.
yeah, but hey, I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
It is fun, in my opinion. I think that's about everything. Do you have any other films you want to shout out before
No, I've only just been w watching like horror movies recently for October.
Fun. Fun. What movies have you been watching?
I'm gonna pull it up. Just
The
watched The Witch, just watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, just watched Fear Street Trilogy. I rewatched, of course, Over the Garden Wall. So yeah, go watch Over the War Garden Wall, everybody. Even if it's past October, watch it in November. Everyone needs to watch it, and once everyone watches it, humanity will be a much better place.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, TJ. I'm so glad you could come on. If people want to find you, where should they find you?
I mean, I don't know if I want to shout out my Instagram, because I've heard horror stories about like people connecting Instagrams and that all pointing out. But I guess for Letterboxd, I just zombie TREX. And yeah, obviously, thanks for having me on. I love doing these kinds of talks with people where you just sit down, talk about film and media. And whatever, I always have a lot of fun with these, and I had a lot of fun here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for listening. That's it. Next week's episode, and for a bit now, I'm gonna be by myself. So that may result in some shorter episodes, some longer episodes, who knows? But as of right now, I'll be by myself. And if I do have a guest on, hopefully it'll be sometime soon. But for right now, solo episodes will be the focus. So, yeah. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed, and if you did, be sure to be on the lookout for more episodes in the future. I think we're done here. So please, step out of my office.